You are now listening to Conversations with Congressman King. Discussion on issues that impact your life with your representative from Iowa's 5th District.
Welcome to Conversations with Congressman King. We're here today with a very well-informed and interesting guest, Dr. Mary Habeck, who has spent 11 years teaching at Yale University's History Department, has written a very interesting book, and then is working on two other books. But the one that we're going to talk about today is Knowing the Enemy, Jihadist Ideology, and the War on Terror. And today, Dr. Habeck has presented to Congress a number of times and has been very informative in how we understand this enemy called jihadists. And welcome, Dr. Habeck, to the program.
Thank you for having me.
I really appreciate you coming on. This has been a fascinating study, and we had an in-depth conversation in my office some months ago now. And it has done a lot to fill in the details of my understanding of our enemy. And I think that the book that you've written, Knowing the Enemy, does that. It's, if the American people understood the enemy the way you understand the enemy, we might have a little different political climate in America today.
Well, happy to help out.
Just starting out, I know that you have talked about and written about the decision really made by the White House more than 4 years ago now. About 5 years ago, to declare our enemy at this fight, this war on terror. And could you expand on that thought a little bit, and if we could go back and redo this, how you might recommend to the president to define our enemy?
Yeah, the original thought was that, for this I really applaud George Bush and his advisors, was that they were not going to make this about religion at all, and they were not going to talk about Islam. So the conversation for the first 4.5 years or so after 9/11 did not have anything to do about Islam, Islamism, Muslims, or the Islamic world in any really sophisticated way. And so my first reaction is I think it was a good idea to make clear that this was nothing to do with Islam in general. But my second reaction is that after you had that first sort of initial anger and desire for, you know, some sort of action wane amongst amongst the American people, that there had to be some kind of rational discourse about what this did have to do with Islam. As I say in my book very clearly, I don't believe that this is about Islam in general. I don't think that Islam is a violent religion in general, or that Muslims want to carry out violence against the United States in general. But it has something to do with Islam, because the guys who are who carried out the attacks claimed to be acting in the name of Islam, and many of the people who since then have carried out terrorist attacks around the world have claimed to be acting in the name of Islam. So I felt that after that first few months, we needed to have some sort of conversation about the relationship between these guys and Islam.
Well, Dr. Habeck, and we've had that conversation, but to try to get an understanding of how deep this goes into the religion, and it looks like it's an attempt to hijack the religion Islam, about what percentage of those who profess to be Muslims would you think are inclined to be supportive of or sympathetic to the cause of Al-Qaeda, the terrorists, the jihadists?
Well, there's actually been quite good polling data on this, so that you can see that the pool of sympathizers, by our standards, is rather large. But my there's been other polls that have been taken that show that the number of people who are actually willing to carry out some sort of terrorism in the name of Islam is very, very tiny. So it's about 0.04% of the Islamic world. And I think that's that number that we really have to think about, because sympathizers, or as many people have pointed out, may be, and in some cases certainly are, sympathizing for reasons that have nothing to do with a support for violence. They sympathize because they think that these guys are acting, against oppression, or they're acting against American imperialism, or something like this, that really has nothing to do with sympathizing with actual violence.
So, would you agree generally with the position that Daniel Pipes has taken on the percentage of self-professed Muslims that would be sympathizers?
What number has he given?
He wrote 10 to 15%.
Yeah, that's if you think about potential sympathizers, that's about right. But that doesn't mean that that 10 to 15% believe that we should carry out violence against the United States, or I myself will go out and carry out violence against the United States. And you know what? If you do like a little bit closer look at that 10 to 15%, most of them sympathize in the sense that I believe that these guys are supporting the interests of Islam and that they are, sort of freedom fighters, not because I want to see Americans dead.
Would it be appropriate or comparable to compare this in our own minds? I'll just say this with my understanding of the Irish Republican Army and the violence that they perpetrated against innocents and families and children with their bombing, and be sympathetic to the idea of a totally free and independent Ireland, but not sympathetic to the violence that's committed against innocents.
Yeah, I would say that that's a very good analogy there, because there are many, many Catholics who thought, I want to have my own, I believe that we should have our own state and have our independence, but that doesn't necessarily mean that I wanted to see those women and those children killed in that attack.
It's so hard for us to put ourselves into the Middle Eastern mindset, that psychology, that culture, that history, but they have an understanding of history that goes centuries back, I would think. Is it common knowledge on the streets in the Middle East to go back to the time of the Crusades, and do they think of this as an extension of the Crusades?
I would say that ordinary Muslims don't think of this in terms of the Crusades, but certainly the guys who attacked us do. So one of the arguments they've been having with people in the Middle East is trying to convince them that this is the third Crusade. Actually, the second Crusade for them would be European imperialism. But it has not been widely bought in the Islamic world. It's just one of those things that they believe, and the jihadists believe, and that they've been trying to sell to the rest of the Islamic world.
And we're here with Dr. Mary Haback, the author of Knowing the Enemy, Jihadist Ideology and the War on Terror. And the Latin term from the Romans was Nosce Hostum, know thine enemy. Did you happen to do a comparison of any of that history that originated the Latin term for know thy enemy to the title of your book today? Can you think of it in terms of how important it is to be successful in a conflict?
I actually was thinking back to Sun Tzu, who has a pretty famous statement where he says, know your enemy and know yourself, and you'll be successful in 100 battles. So my thinking was that we really don't know our enemy or who we're fighting against. And I became convinced of this after 9/11 when I saw so many articles come out saying, why do they hate us? And then you'd have reporters going around to, ordinary Egyptians in the street and saying, why do you hate the United States, And I thought that was appalling. Ordinary Egyptians didn't climb into those planes and try to kill so many of us. This is a very specific group of people who are acting for very specific reasons. And frankly, I waited after 9/11 to see the experts out there write this sort of book. And when nobody did, I felt, okay, well, if nobody else is going to do it, I guess I will.
I'm so glad you did, Mary. And I recall back at Sun Tzu, I believe he also said, if you don't know your enemy or yourself, you will never be successful in battle.
Yeah, he did. And I know that there's a lot of ways we don't know ourselves either. We have a lot of places where we're struggling with that as well. But it seemed to me that where I could be most useful is helping to explain what this particular small group of people believe and why they attacked us.
What is the antidote to jihadism? How do we get to a final victory? What should be our goal, and how should we define it?
I would say that the major action that has to take place is within the Islamic world itself. It's ordinary Muslims who need to understand what these guys are up to, why they're carrying out their attacks. Again, just to repeat this a little bit, the biggest thing that I see going on in the Islamic world is a misunderstanding of what jihad, how jihad is being used by these guys and what jihadism is all about. So they think they understand al-Qaeda because al-Qaeda uses language that they believe they know. But in fact, al-Qaeda has its own language and its own rhetoric that it uses, and it has very different meanings than the things people in the Middle East think they understand. So the biggest thing that has to happen is moderate mainstream Muslims have to be able to stand up to these guys and take back Islam from them. That's, to me, the main objective, the main strategy and objective in this war.
Will the moderate Islams, the moderate Muslims, will they rise up and do that, Dr. Habeck? What is the prospects that they will? What would be their motivation? And why haven't we seen them do that now?
I would say that the reasons we haven't seen them do things, or at least we haven't seen as many as we'd like in the Islamic world do this, go along with kind of our tactics and what we can be doing to help to win this war. So the reason that you haven't seen more people standing up against these guys is, first of all, intimidation. If you remember during the whole cartoon controversy, how a small group of people could take over the public stage and simply intimidate anybody else off of it. And they've spent about 40 years killing and intimidating liberals, liberal Muslims, moderate Muslims, and preventing them from speaking on the public stage. The second thing that's happened is there are governments around the Middle East and in the Islamic world who don't want liberal Muslims to be speaking up. They actually think that it's safer for them to have the violent jihadis, because the violent jihadis, they believe, have other enemies than themselves, whereas the liberals, they know, want to have a new government in place that, a democratic government in place that, would undermine the power of the tyrants. So in some of these countries, like in Egypt, for instance, or even in Pakistan, it's been in the interest of these leaders to undermine liberals and prevent them from speaking out. And the third thing that's happened is that there are many liberals speaking out, but for some reason it's just never reported well on the American press. So for instance, about a year and a half ago, there was a huge, huge rally, public rally in Morocco, which has been one of our firmest friends, against terror carried out in the name of Islam. But I don't remember seeing that reported well in our press.
And within the community of jihadists, we have Al-Qaeda, which is basically Sunni, but the jihadists is a broader definition. Do they come in both Sunnis and Shia, and do they join together, or do they fight us separately for the same reasons?
There are Shia who believe in tenets very similar to those that the jihadists on the Sunni side also hold. But the people I talk about are entirely the Sunni side, because they were the ones who attacked us on 9/11. But as I said, there are people on the Shia side who support ideas that are very similar to these. They are the supporters and the followers of Khomeini. And again, even within the Shia world, the followers of Khomeini are a minority. And if you take a look, for instance, at the Shia in Iraq, the vast majority of them do not support Khomeini or his ideas about violence, and instead are big supporters of a guy named Sistani, the Ayatollah in Iraq, who has great moral authority and who has fought back against this kind of jihadism. So I think that within the Shia world, you actually have more public support and more public kind of leaders for moderate Shiism than you do within the Sunni world.
Well, and here's a question that may seem real obvious, but looking at we're being fought by Shias and Sunnis of a number of different factions, and as I was there over Thanksgiving, I picked up about 5 to 8 different groups that were causing violence in Iraq, not just the Shias and the Sunnis in general terms, but more specifically different groups within each. And the question comes to me, and that is, if they want us to leave Iraq, why don't they just quit fighting Americans so that there would be peace, the government would be established, and we would go home because of that, and we would be home by now if they hadn't been fighting us. But why don't they do that?
The jihadis, I do not think, believe what we've been saying for the last 3.5-4 years about this war. They believe that the only reason we'll leave is through violence. They don't think that we're there just to create a stable Iraqi government and then leave. They think that we're there to occupy their country and steal their oil. So this has been an argument that's been made by Al-Qaeda and others, and that has been bought into by a lot of the jihadis in Iraq. If they could just, come to some sort of position where they could agree with us or understand that we're being sincere about our desire to leave, I think that you would see an end to this fighting. And sure enough, in the last about 6 months, a very large proportion of Sunnis in a place called Anbar province have begun to understand that this is indeed what we want. And
it's great to have some of them on our side.
Yeah,
it's been
great
to have you on board, Dr. Habeck. It's been the fastest 15 minutes I've had in a while. We've had Dr. Mary Habeck on Conversations with Congressman King. This is Congressman Steve King. Dr. Habeck is the author of Knowing the Enemy, Jihadist Ideology, and the War on Terror. Thank you so much, Dr. Habeck.
Happy to be here.
Please join us next time on Conversations with Congressman King. For more information on any of the topics mentioned today, visit the website at house.gov/Steve King.